You are listening to the Power of Why podcast.
That acceptance of the creative process is in many ways a rejection of everything that I had been conditioned into and that so many of us have been conditioned into of, you know, you have to be perfect. You can never make mistakes. You have to follow this set path. Mm-hmm. You have to know exactly where you're going. Creativity has none of that. Like that's that you have to let go of all of those ideas if you want to tap into your creativity. And
hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Power of Why podcast. My name is Naomi Haile, and today we are here with Stephanie Harrison. Stephanie, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to be back. What an honor.
Yeah, we were just talking about the last time we recorded a conversation with you on the show was in December of 2020. Which is 3.5 years ago. Life has changed so much. Yeah. And I'm so beyond proud of you, Stephanie, for everything that you have built. Your vision, you know, in 2020, your vision in 2018 when you started the company, and even before, it feels like you've always stayed true to who you are and your message and how you want to serve people. And so I commend you. I commend you, Stephanie, because I know it's like people see and it looks very seamless, and we also want to recognize that it takes a lot of intention and work and thought to build something so beautiful that reaches so many people. So thank you also for the work that you're doing.
That's so kind. Thank you so much. It's my privilege and my honor. So really, I'm the one who should be thanking you.
So for the audience, if you're not aware, we're with Stephanie Harrison, who's the founder of The New Happy. I want to start by with a quote that you have on your website, which is, we've been told that achieving our own success will make us happy, but happiness comes from helping other people to live happier lives. We are here to help each other. And so you're an expert in the science of happiness, and you're also the creator of the New Happy philosophy and company. Founded in 2018, the New Happy has revolutionized the way that people understand and pursue happiness. Through Stephanie's many creative outlets, her resources reach millions of people around the world every month. And on May 14th, 2024, she'll be coming out with another resource, a book, The New Happy, Getting Happiness Right in a World That's Got It Wrong. It's described as the definitive guide to happiness. Stephanie is a Harvard Business Review and CNBC contributor, and her expertise has been featured in publications such as Fast Company, Forbes, and Architectural Digest. She has a master's degree in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. She's also a regular speaker at Fortune 500 companies and advises on employee well-being and company culture. So Stephanie, again, welcome to the show. I would love for you to share a little bit about your origin story. Growing up in Canada, can you tell me a little bit more about what you loved to do as a child and what were you curious by?
When I think about what I love to do as a child, I think the first answer that comes to mind is probably reading, finding books, exploring new domains. I've been reading nonfiction since I was nonfiction and the kind of field that I'm in terms of like psychology and philosophy and religion since I was a teenager. And I have, I really love nothing more than doing that. And that really probably began, with the seeds of that when I was a child. But I also love to make art. I love to create things. We used to love to put on shows, like corralling my siblings and our neighbors into putting on musicals for our family and friends that we forced them to watch. I had this karaoke machine that changed your voice so it could make it, you know, higher or lower and put on, funny voices. And I used to love playing with that. Any form of really self-expression, I think that's sort of what my childhood joy revolved around. And obviously, has ended up shaping a lot of my life. But it's funny because I really lost a lot of that self-expression for a while. And it was only in my late 20s that I started to rediscover it again. So it wasn't something that was necessarily like a consistent thoroughfare throughout my whole life.
Wow. Yeah. Looking back, I don't think any of that surprises me, just given like the way that you share your message with the world is it incorporates design. It incorporates, very seemingly complex ideas into very simple messaging. And you do so in such a artistic way. Mm-hmm. And so hearing this in terms of what you enjoyed doing as a child is not surprising, but what happened in between that time?
I think that I felt I grew to be self-conscious and embarrassed and feeling, you know, the kind of typical thing of like, oh, I'm not good enough to be an artist. I'm not good enough to be a writer, or that's impractical. You can't do something like that. You have to choose a more professional career or professional interests and things like that. Really, I think it was, you know, like I think all children are creative and have all of these wonderful gifts that they tap into so easily. And then as we get older, we lose track of them because of the way that we're conditioned by our society and our culture and our institutions and all of that stuff. And I certainly wasn't immune to that either. I think believing that there was something different that I had to do in order to be happy, something more quote unquote successful, something that would lead me to success, that was probably what steered me away from doing that. And then ultimately, you know, sadly losing access to that part of myself for such a long time.
You've traveled a lot too and been exposed to many different cultures. You moved to New York when you were 17.
Yes.
Now you're on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any messages that came through either from, you know, the communities that you're a part of in school or even at work that was slowly like leading you back to tapping into your creativity? Or was it all, did it all come from within?
It definitely didn't all come from within. And I think like, I think that the pressure that I was just thinking about this and kind of pondering this for the last 2 weeks, I think the pressure that we put on ourselves to like have all this stuff come from within is really misguided. And we can like dig into that if that's interesting that you want to talk about, but it definitely didn't come from within. It came from having someone and people in my life who believed in me and who encouraged me to tap into that and to almost embrace the messiness of the process as an antidote to the kind of brittle perfectionism that had ruled my life for so long. And that acceptance of the creative process is in many ways a rejection of everything that I had been conditioned into and that so many of us have been conditioned into of, you know, you have to be perfect. You can never make mistakes. You have to follow this set path. Mm-hmm. You have to know exactly where you're going. Creativity has none of that. Like that's that you have to let go of all of those ideas if you want to tap into your creativity. And so having, you know, for me, it was my partner who's a very creative person who encouraged me to start to embrace those different values and approaches. And in the process, it was like freeing myself from some of those restrictions that had been placed upon me that I didn't know about while also helping me tap into more of those sources of joy and fulfillment.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I think that what you said about not knowing that you were even being conditioned or not knowing, because I think creativity is a very natural part of who we are. And I actually do want to dig into the, you mentioned something about the idea that things come, that everything comes from within is misguided. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah.
Specifically, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't want to cut you off. I want to hear what you have to say.
Specifically, when we talk about introspection and like reflecting on life as we are living.
Well, the interesting thing is that the science shows that introspection is a really flawed method for getting to know yourself in many ways. So actually sitting down and sort of like trying to introspect doesn't give you access to your true self in many ways. And it can often actually provide you with, you know, like misguided data and information. So with respect to that, I think it's really interesting to consider like, are there other ways of getting to know yourself or of unpacking what is within you that don't rely upon an introspective process? And I'm not saying there's no value in that. I certainly have found processes like, for example, identifying my core values and journaling and things like that. Like those tools can be really useful. But I think that it paints an incomplete picture. And I also think that it puts so much pressure on people to figure it all out for themselves. And I think if there's like kind of one message that I would tell people that that new happy really represents, it's you're not supposed to do any of this by yourself. And all of our conditioning has taught us that we are, and it's making everything so much harder. So again, like going back to my own story, I believe that because I couldn't tap into my creativity anymore, it felt like it was gone or walled off from me, that there was nothing I could do. That was just the state of affairs for me, right? Like I was never going to be able to go back to that sense of joy and self-expression. But that wasn't true at all. It was just I needed the right help to be able to tap into it. I needed the right support and encouragement and information. And until I had that, it was really hard for me to be able to overcome that barrier. And I think that we put all of this pressure on ourselves to be like, well, I have to discover who I am and then figure it all out and come up with this perfect offering or this perfect creative service or, you know, like self-expression or whatever. And then I'll be able to be the creative person I know I am. And that's just old happy perfectionism in another guise, right? Like that's the same thing. Yeah. So the opportunity is to say like, well, I'm struggling to tap into this part of myself that I want to tap into. Who can help me with that? Who can help support me in that journey? Whether it's reading a book or watching a video or learning from somebody in your life who's a mentor or asking for support and encouragement from someone in your life. We put all of this emphasis on like discovering it all for ourselves. But what if we actually could get there so much faster and with a lot less pain if we allowed other people to help us along the way?
What did support look like for you? What did you over time realize were some of the really helpful ways that you were able to tap into your creativity through the help of, you mentioned your partner helped mm-hmm. you bring some of that back, really, because it didn't leave you, right? Mm. It was always there. You just maybe needed help in covering it. But what was helpful for you specifically, Stephanie?
For me, it was the tacit permission from somebody I loved and to say like, it's okay that this feels hard. It's okay that this is messy. It's okay that you don't know what you're doing. It's okay that you're going to figure it out as you go. It's okay that you don't have a final product. It's okay that you don't know exactly where this is going to take you. Like all of those pressures and those feelings that hold us back from expressing ourselves, like really so much of the barriers to creativity are psychological in nature on that front, you know? Like for me, I would anchor all of those and the belief that I had to be perfect and that I had to achieve my way to happiness. And like, you know, because we've known each other for a long time, the new happy has evolved a lot over the years and it's changed and grown. And it started as a newsletter that I sent every week. And the first template that the first email I sent, you know, went to about 17 people or something. And it was like pink and it had a gradient color on it. And, you know, the fonts were totally different and there was like a gray background, if I'm remembering correctly. Like it looked completely different from what I do today in terms of the actual product that I was producing. And, you know, and then like I just kept writing and sometimes I wrote something I was really proud of. And sometimes I was like, oh, that was a little crap. Like I could have done better on that, but I just kept trying. And then over time, with more practice and more effort, it became easier and I became more able to express myself in ways that continue to feel more and more authentic and like more and more and more effective at the same time. And even the artwork, right? Like when we spoke like 4 years ago or whatever it was, which blows my mind, the artwork was different. It had, you know, different vibes, different colors, different approaches and that kind of stuff. And it took me a while to kind of land on the creative voice of what feels right for me. And if I didn't have somebody in there saying, hey, like you showed up this week and great job, like tomorrow, do it, like next week, do it again. And like each time, like you get a little closer. It's this iterative process that yields so many amazing results, but you have to be willing to show up for the process and like kind of embrace the fact that it's uncomfortable at the beginning and it's not going to feel perfect and easy the way that I wanted it to.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I didn't expect us to go down this line of conversation, but you have an article on your website about purpose. And in it, you shared that most of the people who are purposeful and passionate about something did not get to be that way through a magical light bulb moment, but because they tried stuff, they got curious and they started to investigate the topic, which led to more interest and more curiosity and more investigation. Mm. And the way that you frame that article, which I think, again, leads back to how you're able to simplify ideas, is you go on to share like this is an unhelpful belief that comes from old happy and this is a helpful belief that you could you can consider and implement. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because even in, because I asked so many questions, which did not start through the podcast, but really just in daily life with my peers and my friends and my family, I realized that there were moments where I found myself experiencing, you know, time with people, and I would ask them questions just out of curiosity, right? Like, and there were questions that they had never been asked before. And there were also questions that they never asked themselves. And through that conversation, you know, you get to connect dots from your past and really, I think it is a process of discovery for you and uncovering, okay, like, what am I motivated by? What do I value? Who am I? You know, some of those big questions. And in my mind, whether you're doing that yourself, you know, through a process of like examining your thoughts and your emotions on paper in your bedroom, or you have someone that could be a partner with you as you explore, I do appreciate that process, because I think it does, if anything, that magical light bulb moment, I think for some, like, I've seen it multiple times where they did have that moment of release and be like, oh, like, this is something that I 100% should lean into and continue to explore. But from what I heard from you, it's not like overemphasizing that and not, again, getting out in the world and trying things. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, I think, I mean, to your point, like, in your example, you were already doing that. You know, I think, like, the introspective example would be like you sitting around making a list of questions that you would like to ask somebody someday and then never actually doing it, right? Like, you know, like coming up with, here are the best 20 questions that could ever exist versus what you're describing, which is, I'm going to go practice asking questions of people whenever I see them and engage with them. And it's far easier to discover your passions and your purpose if you're out there doing stuff, because you get instant feedback, and you get feedback in the form of your feelings, right? Like, you discover, like, wow, that was interesting, or like, oh, I feel a little tug of excitement around that, or that felt really fulfilling. And then that motivates you to keep doing it. And so I feel like maybe the best way to think about it is, like, there's a short-term period where introspection can be really helpful in terms of setting you up, but it should set you up for practice and for expression and like being out there, you know? And if you're stuck too long in the introspection stage, you can get stuck and, you know, actually never move forward, which is how I felt. You know, I spent, I don't know, 8 years feeling stuck, unable to move forward. And it wasn't until I started doing stuff that it started to change.
Yeah. I love that instant feedback piece. That's the, I think the value of putting your work out there, whether it was through the newsletter that you started off with 17 people to reaching millions today. Can you share a little bit about some of the costs? Because we've touched on a few, but some of the costs of Old Happy.
Yeah.
I did hear you share that while you were in grad school, you had a lot of questions around what you were learning. Can you bring us back to that time? And firsthand, you'd also shared that you experienced, you know, the detriments of living in an achievement oriented culture. So what are the costs of Old Happy?
Where to begin? So Old Happy is my name for what our society teaches us about happiness and the culture that springs up surrounding it. And so from the time that we're born, we get all these messages about what we should do with our lives and how we should behave and what we should look like and all that kind of stuff. And then most of us conform. Most of us take those messages on board. I certainly did. We kind of follow this predetermined script of, you know, trying to follow through on that. And I argue in my book that that's because we're trying to be happy. We think that doing these things will ultimately lead to happiness. And because happiness is the most important goal for all of us, you know, it becomes very powerful. And so for me, one of the ways that manifested was thinking, okay, once I get this fancy job, then I'll be happy. Or, hey, if you can just lose XYZ amount of weight, then you'll be happy. Or if you can just, you know, find somebody to love you, then you'll be happy. Like, whatever it was, right? Like, any sort of condition But it wasn't even that I thought it would make me happy. It's that I thought it would make me worthy of happiness. I thought it would make show that I was good enough finally. And then that would lead to the feeling of fulfillment that I was looking for. And that's what's really going on here, is that our society has given us all of these conditions of self-worth that come in the form of specific achievements that we have to pursue. And then not only that, but if you want to achieve those things in the right way, you have to do it by yourself. You can't ask for help. You can't lean on other people. You have to be totally independent. You can never struggle. You can never experience difficult emotions. And all of that combined adds up to this construct that I call old happy. So the cost for me, oh, sorry, what was that? You're on mute.
I was saying that's heavy. It's super heavy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's a weight that we carry, I think. Literally, you know, in terms of heaviness. And for me, the costs of that were physical illness, struggles with my mental health, panic attacks, loneliness, feeling lost, feeling like I had no purpose, feeling like I didn't want to get out of bed in the morning, feeling like what was the point of, you know, continuing to pursue things that used to make me feel good. All of that. And then, you know, more broadly at a societal level, when we look at the research on these impacts, it's all of that magnified, right? We have an epidemic of depression, anxiety, and loneliness. We have these profound struggles that we're facing with our mental health. You know, like 1 in 3 Americans say they don't have somebody to confide in. And that's a direct consequence of our culture of individualism. We have hundreds of massive, devastating global problems that could all be fixed. And yet we refuse to attend to them, most of us, in a meaningful way, because we're worried about pursuing our own achievement-oriented goals and desires rather than devoting ourselves to the common good. You know, we have this kind of, we have a planet that we're destroying because we think that the short-term happiness of, you know, getting on an airplane and traveling is going to make us, is going to make us feel better, versus thinking more holistically about sustainability and what each of us can do, as well as holding companies and governments accountable for what they do. We have like just so many different challenges that we're facing. And I ultimately think that a lot of them, if not all of them, stem in one way or another from old happy. And part of the book is actually like providing the research and the examples of what that looks like. I think that it affects everything in our lives. It affects our relationship with ourselves, our relationship with others, our communities, our workplaces. You know, there's so many impacts, and starting to unwind and unpack those is sort of, I think, the next big step for all of us if we want to actually move towards a happier world.
Yeah. And you mentioned, well, the cultural implications of living in this type of society. What have you learned from other cultures that have inspired you to know and really live by a better way? Are there any particular?
There's so much we can learn from these other cultures and the values that they have and that they kind of teach and espouse as well. So there's been a lot of research looking at happiness in individualistic countries like the United States or Canada, and then ones that look at happiness in more collectivist countries. And, you know, those include a lot of Asian countries. And then there's amazing, you know, research being done on African countries and the different approach in their worldviews and the emphasis that they put on interconnectedness, which is something that we absolutely completely need to honor in order to ever find any sort of happiness. So I think that from my perspective, individualism is really baked into the American ethos and DNA. It's something that's a core part of this culture, and I'm not going to be able to change that. Like, that's not something I have the power to do. But I think that the opportunity lies in asking, you know, I have all this individual freedom, I have these opportunities to be authentic and express myself. Am I doing it just for me, or am I doing it for others? Can I use who I am to contribute to the world around me? Because that sort of takes the best of both worlds in many ways. It takes the emphasis on an individual's strengths and gifts, but also integrates them within a broader fabric of a community, and thinking about how one affects the other and vice versa, and where we can find not only harmony between the two, but an elevation of the two. Can the individual be used to make that community or the world a thriving, more equitable, more compassionate place? And then if so, what are the impacts of that community upon that individual? And then how does it ripple out to individuals who haven't even been born yet, or towards, you know, people who might not be physically able or supported in being able to express themselves in those ways? How can that contribute to elevating the quality of life and well-being for all of us? And so I think it's kind of that blended approach that I'm striving to advocate for here.
At the very essence of your work, is that what you're trying to give people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, like, you know, I always say, you read the quote, like, I always say the kind of unofficial motto of the New Happy is, we are here to help each other. And that's the secret to happiness. We're supposed to help using who we are, and we're supposed to receive help using who others are. And that is what allows us to experience happiness and joy. And at the same time, that's what will help us to make a better world.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
You create many, and this is going back to, I have like questions about your artful designs and your process of creation. You create like many different mediums for people to interact with your work. Mm. So beautiful, mind-catching illustrations. You have a daily newsletter, articles on your website, interviews with different media outlets. And you've done, what, 15 podcast interviews, you were telling me, in the last 2 weeks, and now a book. So could you bring us back to, again, to 2018? What was your thesis for creating the New Happy? Meaning, like, what was your understanding at that time of the problem and how the New Happy would fill that gap?
When I was in grad school, I ended up writing this thesis arguing that we had gotten happiness all wrong and, you know, proposing a new approach to it. And so that was really the first attempt that I made to provide a prescription for what I thought ailed our society and us as people. And it's funny, you know, I went back and read some of it when I was in the process of finishing my book, and so much of it is still there. You know, it's like still in the book that I've written. It's communicated differently in a hopefully more interesting way than an academic paper, but the kind of the bones of it were all there. And I started the New Happy because I wanted to take that academic work and find a way to communicate it in a popular or accessible manner. And by popular, I mean like not in an academic setting, like not publishing papers on it. I had no idea how to do that. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what I was working towards. All I knew was, hey, I have this idea and I think maybe it could help some people and I should start talking about it so maybe I can help some people avoid what I went through. And so, like, when I think about my work, the soil is like the kind of the thesis, like that general argument, the New Happy, which has kind of evolved into what I call the New Happy philosophy. And then all of the different ways of communicating that are like the flowers that grow in the soil. Like, there are different ways, because I know that people learn in different ways. They like to consume information in, you know, their own time and in their own manner. Some people prefer listening to stuff. Some people like the artwork. Some people want to read. You know, some people are interested in quotes and things like that. Like, there's so many different ways that you can reach people. And it really all stems from the core philosophy. And then the medium that I choose is tailored to help people to learn and understand. I think of myself now as some combination of like a happiness communicator or teacher in some way. And my classrooms are just like different ways of doing that, you know? But I had no idea that that's where I would end up. I just thought, okay, how does somebody share an idea with people? And, you know, the only way I could think of doing that was starting a newsletter, because I hated social media. I didn't have my own account. The idea of doing a social media page was like abhorrent to me at the time. And so I thought, okay, well, email writing, that seems like more authentic, and I'll start with that. And so, ironically, looking at where we are today, but yeah, I would say, like, I didn't have any plans. I just wanted to share the idea with people who were interested.
Mm-hmm. And with such a strong message, like, they were going to find you in so many different ways. It's so funny that you describe social media like that back in 2018, because you're probably like crying now with the way that things have gone. Okay, this goes back to how you construct these beautiful images. Yeah. Have you always, like you mentioned, you told us a little bit about your love for the arts and visuals. How did you refine that skill set and really think about combining your messages into that form?
So I wanted to come up with a unique way to communicate these ideas in a way that would actually help people, because I knew for me, like, as I said, you know, everyone learns in different ways, but for me, it's rare that I see something like a text-based piece of content and I'm able to remember that in a real way. Just the way that my brain works, like, sort of, I like read it, I'm like, oh, that's great. And then it sort of like flies out my head again, you know, like unless I consciously reflect on it and kind of like integrate it into myself in some way. But obviously, like, a lot of the time when you're scrolling, that doesn't happen. It doesn't really have the space to do that. And so I knew I wanted to find a way, like, you know, the kind of whole thing about the new happy is like, we're a new philosophy of happiness. So let's do things in a new way. Let's come up with different approaches.
I love that.
And so, I have always had this ability to, I guess, like, think in pictures. It's always been something that I remember. So, you know, for example, if you tell me a feeling, then I have a color in my head that that's represented by, or if you describe something that happened to you, I could like mentally configure that into a series of shapes and, you know, like different visual images. But it certainly wasn't something that I had any control over or had the ability to meaningfully express outward. Like, I used to love, when I worked at LinkedIn, my colleagues always used to tease me because I was obsessed with making PowerPoints. Like, I loved making these PowerPoints that had colorful boxes and like use bright colors. And I would always get in trouble because they weren't the LinkedIn brand colors that I was using. But I was like, you know, whatever, screw this. I want to make this. And so, but they always used to tease me about it. And like, looking back, I'm like, oh, there was a little clue that I missed, right? Like, there was a little thing I didn't quite notice, but I loved doing that. And I loved the visual form of communication. And whenever anyone at work was like, oh, I have to do this PowerPoint, I'd say, oh, like, do you want some help? Do you want me to work on it for you?
Yeah, I'll do it.
It's so dorky, right? Like, but it shows a lot. Over time, I learned how to sort of refine that mental visualization element just through practice. Like, at first, you know, like the first pieces of art that I made for the new happy that had that at the core of it were just very intuitive of like, here's how I feel like communicating this message. And then over time, as it's evolved, it's become both like easier and also like more complex in terms of figuring out how to communicate these ideas in a way that's fresh and meaningful and that, you know, continues to honor the core message at the heart of it. And I never thought that anyone would resonate with them the way they do. I never thought that anyone would like, I never dared to
really
hope. That's probably the like right way. Like, I didn't dare to hope that it was something that people would enjoy. I was like locked in my house during the pandemic. My partner was incredibly sick. We were like drowning in life. It was so hard. And I thought, okay, I have nothing to lose. I have nothing, like nothing holding me back except myself. And in the process of making the art, it was also like very healing for me as well, very meaningful and fulfilling. And so it became this like form of self-expression at the same time. Not only my original intent was to use it to communicate the science and like all of the things I had learned, but then at the same time, it also became something that brought me like a great deal of peace and fulfillment as well.
Yeah. And for so many others, the way people engage with those visuals, and now you've turned, for some of them, you've turned them into videos.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot more like interactive. Hey there. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If you are enjoying the conversation, make sure to share it with a friend. Take a screenshot, spread the word. It really allows me to bring on more incredible guests as we continue to level up in the podcasting space. Yeah, like sometimes I'll just scroll through your page and whichever one I click, I always have this desire to share it with other people. And especially when I know that they're going through something and this message will resonate with them. But it's so accessible. Like, it's so accessible. It's so like, even if you don't read the caption, it's intuitive what you're saying. And so I'm glad that you kept refining it and kept going, because the way that people interact with it is amazing.
Thank you. That means so much to me. And, you know, I think like, honestly, when I think about doing that, has been a gift in so many different ways. But I think like what you're describing is the most special thing, which is like the fact that I can make something that's inevitably a reflection of my own, in many ways, like emotional experiences or perspective on the world, as well as like, because I think like as much as I'm communicating research, I'm also trying to put like a really human spin on it where it feels more about like it's grounded in you rather than in the science, right? Like it's what happens to you when you do these things, that kind of stuff. The fact that you can look at that and think, wow, this represents me and something I'm going through, that is the most beautiful thing I can imagine, because it shows me that we're so much more alike than we think we are, right? Like we think that we have all these unique experiences and no one will understand us, but then, you know, somebody can look at this image which has like four circles on it and something in it connects with them, right? And that means that like we're not alone, right? And so like that's kind of what it all comes back to for me. Like if we could just acknowledge how much we share and how similar our inner experiences are, then what could we overcome in terms of our differences and our challenges, right? Like to me, that gives me so much hope because it connects us in this really meaningful way. I like to think about that. And that's why that compliment is so meaningful to me. So thank you.
And you're right. We have a lot of misconceptions about other people and people who we engage with on a daily basis or don't. If I can ask, what do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about you?
Oh my gosh. What a question. You just used your amazing question asking gift. I mean, I don't know, because like, honestly, I sort of hope people don't think about me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not trying to avoid the question. I'm just trying to like unpack my initial feelings about this. So I'll get there, I promise. But you asked such a good question that you opened like a new door inside of me. So I have to like stumble through the room and like figure out what's going on in here. So I don't want people to think about me. Like I want them to think about themselves and then the people in their lives who the work applies to. So if, and I think like, that's why I never make any sort of information or content that's like about myself in any way. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, I've had to share a little bit more personal stuff about the book as like part of, you know, kind of sharing and getting the word out there, but that's the most I've ever done. And I feel deeply uncomfortable with it. So it's been an exercise in stepping out of my comfort zone, but I feel like if I'm doing a good job, then no one is thinking about like, who's the person behind this. They're thinking about, oh, this applies to me. And it also reminds me of, you know, my friend Jack, who's going through something really hard. And just like you said, I'm going to share it with them and like give them a little boost. Or this helps me to understand like something my boss said, or my friend who's going through a tough time and I've been struggling to be empathetic. I can do something different for them. So that's like ultimately my goal. So I don't really know what people think about me, I guess, because of that, because I'm not like kind of sharing that stuff publicly. Maybe there are people out there who think I'm naturally happy. That would be like perhaps one misconception, which I would say absolutely not. And, you know, I've had to learn this just like everybody else. And the tools that I share are ones that I use myself and that have shaped my own life. So maybe that's one. Yeah, I guess I'll go with that. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
You know, it's so interesting that you shared, because you don't share much of about yourself on the New Happy page. And you also have a personal page that you had recently, I think it was last year, that you, you're creating videos that basically like break down some of the concepts that you share on the New Happy page. But the reason I asked the question, maybe this will help. The reason I asked the question is because even though people may not know who Stephanie is, just by virtue of interacting with a lot of the content that you share, there may be some pieces of a puzzle that people put together in their head around, oh, like this person has it all figured out. And I think there's a lot of value again in not making assumptions. What you said previously is so profound around like just how you broke down my comment about resonating with the content that you share, that we are very similar. And I think if we just take a moment to immediately find the ways that we connect with the people who are around us, like we're just being a much better place, you know? So I appreciate that about you. And I appreciate the first thing you said when I asked that question, which is my job is to serve and to serve other people, because it actually releases you of so many insecurities. Like when I think about public speaking, for example, so many of the fears around public speaking are as a result of thinking like, oh, how am I going to look like up there? What if I forget what I'm going to say? But when you start thinking about how do I be the most valuable for the people who are going to be listening and are in the audience, everything shifts.
It does. It's magic. Like it's the most unbelievable perspective shift. And I would not be able to do anything that I do without grounding myself in that. And it's also like the source of my happiness. It's the source of my joy and fulfillment. And there's nothing in the world that compares, and nothing ever will compare. So like my job, as you said, my job is to serve. And when I forget that, that's when all of those problems crop up, you know, like insecurities and, you know, feeling overwhelmed, feeling really stressed, losing sight of what matters most, all of that. And for me, realizing that was sort of the unlock of everything good that is in my life now.
I had a question here that I typically like asking people, which is, what are your markers for personal growth? And every time I ask a question now, I'm going to think, is this like rooted in an old happy? how do you think about your own personal and professional growth as it relates to the work that you do with New Happy or otherwise?
I think that I view growth as the result of trying and making mistakes and learning. And so because I value growing as a person, and growing is what allows me to serve in new ways or in more expansive ways, then it also is what frees me to feel comfortable trying things and making mistakes and feeling scared and uncomfortable and all of that fun stuff that goes along with that. Not fun, not easy, obviously, but
yeah,
it's for me, like I'm passionate about growing because of what it helps to fulfill in terms of my purpose and my service to others. I don't have any metrics that I'm working towards where I'm like, I need to do A, B, and C, and that's how I'm going to show that I've grown, because I think that that's ultimately like misguided and often ends up like leading to a lot of stress and unhappiness. So for me, a moment of growth, like maybe like a recent moment of growth I had was having a lot of challenges like kind of hit me in the face all at once and feeling really emotionally overwhelmed. Like I'm a very sensitive person. I'm sure that's no shocker to you or to anyone who knows me. I feel things very deeply and I react very strongly and I have like very intense emotions and struggle a lot with like finding an equilibrium. And a couple weeks ago, going through all these different challenges in my life, feeling totally overwhelmed. And a moment of growth for me was allowing myself to just cry and be sad and be mad and be frustrated and be pissed off and all of those. And then allowing it all to be, and then being like, okay, well, you know, that happened and it's okay. It's totally fine that you feel like that. That's amazing. I never would have been able to do that 10 years ago. You know, like I felt, and even a couple years ago, I probably would have fought that a lot and felt like, oh, you know, like, felt like I tried to control it more or judge myself more, but it came almost more naturally to me. And so that was the moment of being like, wow, this is amazing. Like how much progress I've made on this front. And hopefully that self-acceptance helps me to offer something to other people. And ironically, like I was reflecting on it a little while later and I came up with an image that I really want to make that like represents what this looks like. And so ultimately, like hopefully I'll be able to make that and share it and maybe people will find some value in it. So it's sort of like this loop, I think, for me.
Oh, yeah.
It all kind of comes around like that.
Yeah. Well, life and art, like it's the life imitates art, art imitates
totally.
Life. You do something, I believe, every week on your Instagram page where you ask people to ask you questions. And I'm sure that in and of itself is such a, like lots of ahas, lots of pattern recognition around what are people going through? What are they navigating? What questions do they have? what gaps in understanding exist that maybe I could help fill with research and ideas. So drawing on all of maybe those like weekly experiences or moments that you have connecting with the community, what have you learned new about people maybe in the last few months? That's really interesting.
I love that question. I've learned the most from our community, from people sharing like that. It has been the most valuable teacher because, you know, when you ask people like, what do you need help with for 4 years, every single week, you do have the pattern recognition of being like, okay, here are sort of the big things that people tend to really struggle with. And, you know, the thing that always comes up, there's two things that I see again and again. The first is not feeling like you're good enough. So whatever that words that takes, I think so many of us believe like, oh, I'm the only one who feels this way. And like, let me tell you are not the only one. I can promise you unequivocally that there are hundreds of thousands of people out there who feel the exact same way as you do, at least probably all of the people. So that's the first one. And so I think that really shaped a lot of my book and the thinking around the new happy philosophy. I don't think that when I started, you know, the newsletter and then a couple of years later doing the artwork on Instagram, I don't think I had an awareness of just how pervasive that was. I think I was somebody who believed, oh, it was just, it's a me problem. I just have to figure out my stuff and everyone else feels like they're okay on the inside. And so I didn't pay as much attention to it. And that helped me to really identify that this was a core need and ultimately led to a lot of light bulb moments about, you know, like this needs to be a part of the philosophy and we need to address it for people. And then the second is loneliness, feeling like you're alone, which obviously very related at the end of the day, but feeling like you don't have someone to lean on, feeling like you can't ask for help, feeling like you don't have anyone to confide in. People are really, really lonely and they don't know how to get out of it. They don't know what to do differently. And so I think like those two are probably the core things that continually pop up no matter when I ask or who I ask.
Yeah, not surprising.
Yeah.
There's a massive loneliness epidemic. And wondering, out of curiosity, is most of your audience in the United States, in Canada?
That's a good question. Actually, no, it's pretty global. I think probably about like half is in Canada and the US and the UK probably. And then the rest is from all around the world. So it's a pretty, it's a pretty global community when you think about it.
Yeah. Cause I'd be so interested in like your data mind. I'd be so interested in like how the questions and maybe some of the things that people navigate may look different depending on where they are in the world and like what culture they are most familiar with or were conditioned by.
Yeah, that would be so interesting. I would love to learn more about that too. That could be our next project.
Thank you, Stephanie. I have one more question before we wrap up, which is how do you find moments of solace and what do you go to, or what activities or what experiences really help with rejuvenating your creative energy?
I would say walking is always amazing. I think I used to do a lot of, you know, like really high intensity workouts and stuff. And then over the years, just like really lost my appetite for that kind of stuff. And instead I just try to walk a lot and I love it. I can call friends if I want to talk. I can think. I can just like, when I was writing my book, I used to do a voice memo to myself. And I would just talk like as I walked with ideas and trying to figure out problems and stuff. Because sometimes, you know, talking things out can be a lot easier. And I was stuck on a lot of things. And then reading or like immersing myself in other people's creative work, I find so much inspiration in, especially reading things that aren't related to my field, you know, things like fiction or poetry or looking at artwork, you know, different other forms of creative expression. It's really inspiring to be able to reap the benefits of other people's gifts at work. And that always fills me up as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the same way that you do for other people. So thank you, Stephanie. This was
thank
a
you
treat.
So much.
I'm so glad that we made the time to do this three and a half years later.
So grateful.
I hope that everyone who had the chance to listen really heard everything that Stephanie had to share today. And hopefully I think out of everything really helps you unlock how you think about service and how you think about using your gifts to be a light in the world. So thank you again, Stephanie. And for everyone else, we will catch you in the next episode.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to another thought-provoking episode of the Power of Why podcast. For show notes and additional resources, visit us at www.powerofwhy.co. And while you're here, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform to continue your journey towards understanding the power of your purpose and creativity.